It doesn't matter what you shot on the last hole, doesn't matter how hard the next hole is going to be. It doesn't matter what your score is. If you were four over after four holes, what do you want to do on the next hole? Give yourself the best chance for birdie without taking an unnecessary risk. If you were two under after four holes, what do you want to do on the next hole? Give yourself the best chance for birdie without taking an unnecessary risk. Now, where it really comes in is you're on the 16th hole and you're one under par. What do you want to do on the 17th? Most people would say, oh, I just want to par in and protect my score. Not a good plan. Stick to the game plan. Give myself the best chance for birdie without taking an unnecessary risk. And you do that all the way in. Now, if you hit it in trouble or you miss the green, it becomes give myself the best chance to save par without taking an unnecessary risk. And that's the whole thing.
Hi, this is Dan Weatherly from Overland Park, Kansas, and I play at St. Andrews right here in Overland Park. Brought to you by MyGolfingStore.com. This is Golf Smarter number 842.
As Dan just said, this episode is brought to you by MyGolfingStore.com/GolfSmarter, where Golf Smarter listeners get 50% off of a brand new Eagle Eye rangefinder with laser accuracy. This episode is also brought to you by T-Box Coffee, a premium coffee subscription for golfers delivered right to your door. A hole-by-hole game plan for better golf by Dr. Joe Parent, author of Zen Golf.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Dr. Joe.
Hi, Fred.
It's so good to have you on again. I mean, I say again with such pride because you, I don't know what made you think it would work, but you were episode number one. And when I wrote to you and asked you, I had just read Zen Golf and I'm like, this is how I want to kick off the show. And you're like, podcast? What's a podcast?
Sure. Happy to do it.
And that was 17 years ago and still plugging away here and still excited to have you back on the show.
And now we both have gray hair.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I did then too. I don't know. That was, I have no idea. But how has your game evolved in that amount of time?
My own game. Well, let's see. I do the best when I remember the coaching that I give to my students and apply
it to myself. Does that get in the way?
No. If I remember it and apply it to myself, I go, oh, yeah, that sounds like a good thing to do. So for my game, interestingly, I realized that working out and strengthening some golf muscles gets me a little extra yardage. So I have recovered some of the yardage that I had lost over time. I feel like there's always room for our short game to get better. And I have a very, very good friend named Ray Carrasco, who I met, I think, since I did that podcast. So it's been about 10 years. He's the best bunker player I've ever seen and the best bunker instructor. So my bunker play has gotten a lot better, a lot more confidence in it. You know, knowing the physics actually does make a difference. You can't just do the mental game. You know, I like to tell that story where I had two students who just wanted to work on their mental game, so they went out with no clubs and no balls and just made their swings and said, oh, nice. First tee, 280 right down the middle. The other guy, he made his swing and said, oh, 290 right down the middle. So they made birdies and eagles all the way around, of course, and they're on the 18th fairway, and one says, I think I'm away, and I got about 175. That's a smooth 8-iron for me. And it's tracking. It's in the hole. And the other guy said, you lose. He said, how come? He said, you hit my ball. So you can't just play the mental game. The mental game is how you use your mind to run your body so that they're in sync and not fighting each other. It helps to understand the physics so that you know what your mind is trying to get your body to do. And Ray taught me a lot about the physics of bunker play and short game. So that has improved tremendously. My putting was great and still great, and that's why I teach putting is one of my main things. And then
love the Zen putting book.
Yeah, thank you. And then the full, you know, the full swing game, we're always looking for a little more distance and a little more accuracy.
And I go in the opposite order. I prefer to have more accuracy than distance.
I think I can adjust
on the distance.
I'm telling you what most golfers, the first thing is distance.
Yeah.
And then accuracy. And it the accuracy is more important. I remember I got a little tendonitis in my right arm, and I needed to be able to play, I needed to take two extra clubs and swing really easily. I never hit it so straight.
Interesting. That's
what's happening with my game. But you know what? I spend less time on my game because I actually get more out of working with others. And that's the real joy for me, to help other people get more out of their games, to enjoy it more, be less frustrated, and more important, to take the insights they get from how they play better golf to have better lives. And that's where mindfulness comes in.
And when we first started talking years ago, mindfulness was a unique concept. Not anymore.
I introduced it in Zen golf 20 years ago.
Yeah.
To the game of golf. And it's pretty pervasive now.
Yeah.
So I'm quite delighted and proud of that.
Actually the term has become ubiquitous. I overheard some guys in my foursome having a conversation behind me, and the guy even said, "I'm getting into the Zen golf of it now." And I'm like, "Yeah. Are you reading Dr. Perry?" He goes, "What?" I said, "I heard you say Zen golf." He goes, "Yeah, that's my mindset now." It's like, "Oh, okay."
Well, it's actually something that I had aspired to when I wrote Zen Golf, that people would start using that as a description of when they were playing in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when I first started the podcast, and I hadn't been playing that long, when I started, and I had read two books. And it's so interesting now that I'm bringing them both back into my game and my life as being pivotal, but also like rereading is Zen Golf and Golf in the Kingdom. I'm reading Golf in the Kingdom again, and I've been talking about this. And Ben Klein, who's now the executive director, had him on a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, it's just so great to be able to read that again and get inspired by it once again.
I am on the board of the Shivas Irons Society, which is Shivas Irons, for people who don't know, is the main character, the mystical golf pro that Michael Murphy, who's the author of Golf in the Kingdom, meets when he goes to Scotland. And student and guru. He's like his golf guru. And yep. He teaches him how to play golf out of his mind. So he is, so they named this the fan club, essentially, of Golf in the Kingdom after him, and it has become its own community of the Shivas Irons Society. And we take trips, and we have a particular way of playing golf a la Golf in the Kingdom.
Right, Ben Klein.
Steve Cohn, who has since passed away, sadly, founded that, and he had been teaching a Golf in the Kingdom workshop with my friend Fred Shoemaker at Esalen for a long time. Michael Murphy was a founder of Esalen, so it all came together there. And that's how that organization started. And Golf in the Kingdom and Zen Golf are very, very complementary. Very complementary ideas.
Well, I was saying that Ben Klein, who's now the executive director of the Shiva's Iron Society, and, you know, we miss Steve. He was an amazing man. But I think that's you and I met at a Shiva's Iron event.
I think so,
before
too.
I started the podcast.
And Ben and I are taking a group County. Ben and I are taking a group up to Bend and Dunes in August.
Oh, phenomenal.
So what we do is we have at least one silent hole per round, where from the time you all walk on the tee to the time you all walk off the green, silence and no hand signals or anything. I mean, it's functional silence in that if somebody has lost their ball, you go find it, you go, hey, over here. But other than that, there's not the usual communications. And it really reveals a lot about your state of mind when you hit a great shot and you don't hear, hey, nice shot, that's great. And you really start to recognize your own thought patterns and how you think about yourself, think about the game, think about everything while you're playing. We also try to play for creativity a one club hole, where from the tee till we hole out, you play one club. Now, one of my favorite shots, this may surprise you, is a driver off the deck. And
wow.
So we had the eighth hole at Bend and Dunes was our one club hole. So I said, I'm going to play with a driver. Teed off with the driver, had about 170 yards in. So I hit a punch driver up to the front of the green off the deck. And then I bumped a driver up along the green, just past the hole, tapped it up near the hole and putted it in, tapped it in for a bogey. Said, hey, that was fun. I'm going to do that on the next hole too. And then I just kept doing it. I said, I'm going to do it until I have a shot I can't play with a driver, like out of a bunker or something like that. Never had it. Played 11 holes at Bend and Dunes with just a driver.
Wow. Wow.
Creativity. It's about fun and creativity. What was my score? I have no idea. I know my caddy wasn't too happy that he carried a whole bag of clubs and all I used was my driver. But, you know, you make a little half swing and bunt it up there and it bounces onto the green. And on a 150-yard par three, I was closest to the pin.
With a driver?
With a driver.
Off the deck?
Nope. That well, is on outrageous. Par three, I got to tee it up. I got to tee it up on a par three.
Well, how do you hit? All right. I'm going to try to figure that one out, but I want to take a time out. We'll be right back after this. This episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by mygolfingstore.com/golfsmarter, home of the Eagle Eye Rangefinder. The Eagle Eye Rangefinder is my new favorite rangefinder, and I've used a lot of different rangefinders and GPS apps, but the premium features that include slope technology, which I've never had before, a mind-blowing 800-yard range, and my favorite feature, the flagpole lock vibrating sensor. With all these features available, it's hard to believe that it's a fraction of the cost of all the overpriced big brand name rangefinders out there. It's called the Eagle Eye Rangefinder. And after using it for myself, it's now the only rangefinder I carry on the course. And it's so easy to use. Just raise the rangefinder to your eye and find the pin. The Eagle Eye will automatically lock onto the target, even if, like me, you have shaky hands. Now, here's the part that I'm so excited to share. The Eagle Eye usually retails for $259.97. However, since you're a Golf Smarter listener, they've put together a special 50% off special price just for you. Yeah, I said 50% off. That means for a limited time, you can get the Eagle Eye Rangefinder right now for the ridiculously low price of just $129 US. Head over to mygolfingstore.com/golfsmarter. Again, that's mygolfingstore.com/golfsmarter. I'll make sure to put a link in today's show notes, but to make it real easy, just click on the banner right on the top of the page at golfsmarter.com. Now, if you don't believe me, here are some sample testimonials from the tens of thousands of golfers who shoot lower scores using the Eagle Eye Rangefinder. Adam, a bogey golfer from Kansas, immediately took several strokes off his handicap, and he had no problem finding the pin, even with his shaky hands. Brian, a 12 handicapper, said, "Whether you're a beginner, intermediate, or pro, you owe it to yourself to try one." And Peter S. said, "This has improved my game more than anything I've tried." So, go to mygolfingstore.com/golfsmarter and secure your rangefinder, because this is a limited time deal and you don't want to miss out. Is one hole enough to play silent golf? I mean, the reason I ask that is because I try to walk every time I play golf. Doesn't always happen, mm-hmm. but I try to walk every time I play golf. And somebody early on in the show said to me, "Walk fast, swing slow." And I still carry that with me. So I generally walk by myself a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not communicating with anybody. My monkey mind is going on, and I'm talking to myself a lot about right. the last shot and the next shot.
Right.
Is one hole enough to play silent golf? I mean, it sounds like a fascinating experiment.
There's a difference when you're alone as opposed to when you're with other people and you don't talk.
I never play by myself. I'm with a group.
But are
yeah,
they?
Yeah, no, I rarely go out by myself. I don't like being out by myself.
But. Understood. Okay, I misunderstood that. Now, are they people you know?
Yes, you do too. John Leland.
but have you told them, "I'm not going to be talking to you at all"?
No.
You see, that's the difference, that you make a commitment. So no one expects you to talk. Now, if you're deciding to be silent, but somebody asks you a question, do you just ignore them? No.
No, of course I'll answer them.
But in this case, nobody's asking you a question. Nobody's praising your good shot. Nobody's sympathizing with a bad shot. The company all directed in the same way. We have a unspoken, unverbalized, unexpressed support for each other to be able to be silent. Now, is one hole enough? Not necessarily. For some people, they can barely get through it.
Oh, yeah.
They can't stand it, and they end up making gestures and having to clap or do something because it's too uncomfortable for them. But when you're used to it, the interesting thing is after you come off the green, nobody wants to be the first one to talk. So it goes, it stays silent for quite a while. Anyway,
but the discomfort is part of it, right?
Yeah. Look at your mind. Why are you uncomfortable just being in your own space? Why do you need to have this need to get confirmation from somebody else or give confirmation to someone else? And there's no answer to that, but it's an important thing to explore. And, you know, I want to segue back to mindfulness. That's really what mindfulness is about. People think, oh, it's about calming your mind. Well, there are two aspects to the practice. One is calming or settling the mind. Yes, you need to do that because we have our monkey mind just going and going and going and going and going, and we're in our head and not tuned into our body. So we need to drop it down and slow it down. But the reason for doing that is not just for calming. It's to be able to have some insights. You know, if you have a lake and the water is whipped by the wind and you have white caps, you can't see anything down below. If you have a stream and there are rapids, it's white water. You can't see. So when your mind is turbulent, there's no possibility for insight. But when you calm it a little bit, you can start to see how thoughts arise, how they dwell, where they go, and what comes up to follow them. And you start to see your thought patterns. You start to see your comforts and your discomforts. You start to see your habits, habitual ways of thinking. So when the wind isn't blowing and the lake is still, from one angle, you can see all the way to the bottom. From another angle, the surface reflects things vividly. So insight comes in both directions, looking in and also being able to see what's going on out there clearly without adding on a lot of interpretations. And that's really what mindfulness is about, both tranquility and insight. So you could say it's mindfulness and awareness.
Right, right. And then applying that to golf.
Well, you know, golf's a lot like life. It's just golf's a little more complicated. Yes, we want to apply it 24/7. That's the idea. People split up their and compartmentalize their lives. I remember playing golf with an actor who was also a Zen practitioner. And he came to one of my programs and he said, "Wow, I never thought to apply this to golf." And I said, "You've been doing the Zen meditation. Why wouldn't you be applying it to everything in your life, not just when you're doing the meditation?" Meditation is not for its own sake. Meditation is to help you work with your mind so that when you get up, you're a better person.
Yeah. Yeah. And the term monkey mind, I've been using that. The term monkey mind, I've been using it for years, and I realized because you introduced me to it. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's me.
It's when it's just jumping from branch to branch to swinging from vine to vine, just all over the place. Now, there's another use of that, which is to understand our perceptions. And I want to share this with people because I think it's really important to understand why too much thinking over a golf shot robs you of other aspects of it. Our mind, our perceiving mind, is like a monkey in a room with six windows. The windows are the sense perceptions. So what are the traditional five senses? Seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and tasting. Now, smelling and tasting aren't necessarily the most important when you're playing golf, but seeing, hearing, and feeling certainly are. And smelling, when you're out on the golf course, to smell the flowers, to smell that brings you back to the present moment because all the sense perceptions are happening in the present moment. But there's a sixth window of perception. It's mental perception. You perceive your thoughts. If I ask you, what were you just thinking? You are aware of that. You perceived your own thought. So if your mind is focused, you see the monkey looking out all the windows can only look out one window at a time. Then all the others go to the background. Light is still coming in, but all the others go to the background. So if you're really focused on seeing, you don't hear as much. If you want to listen to music, what do? You close your eyes so that you can just focus on that sound. And you do the same thing when you're tasting something. That's right. Now, if you're thinking and you're all caught up in your thoughts, all the other sense perceptions go to the background. If you're in a conversation with somebody and you're going back and forth, let's say you're driving, and I don't recommend this for a reason, and you're in a conversation with someone, You're both thinking about what you're going to say next and listening to what they're saying. You're thinking about what they said, thinking, listening. You're seeing where you're going, hopefully, but you miss your exit. You miss your turn. You don't really see what's going on out there. It's a background perception. Now, if you're playing golf and you're over the ball and you're thinking about all sorts of stuff, all your swing feels are gone. You have no feel. Your visualization of the shot that you want to hit, gone. Because your monkey mind is only occupied with thinking. And if you're thinking about swinging, you're thinking, you're not swinging. So we need to have trained ourselves so that we recognize, we're aware, where is my mind? Is it in my head thinking about stuff? Or is it in my body? And is it in my imagination of the shot I want to hit? What we want to do for the ideal golf shot is have our mind moving back and forth between visual image in our mind of the shot we want to hit and bodily feel that will produce it. Feel, visualization or image. Feel, image. Feel, image. Swing into the picture. That was Tiger's instruction from his dad from the beginning. Picture the shot you want to hit and then swing into the picture. Picture the way the putt's going to roll out and then roll it into the picture. That's the ideal way to work with the sense perceptions.
That's wonderful. Oh, that's so good. Let's take another time out. We'll be right back. This episode is brought to you by T-Box Coffee. So this may sound crazy, but I love a cup of coffee first thing in the morning. But many years ago, like more than 20, I eliminated all caffeine from my diet. Energy has never been my issue. So I'm sure my story sounds completely ridiculous to any coffee drinker out there. But how important is it for you to have a strong cup of coffee to start your day, and especially before a morning tea time? Well, then you should know all about the freshly roasted, specialty grade premium coffee roasted for golfers that is delivered to your door. Introducing T-Box Coffee. T-Box Coffee is a roast-to-order coffee company, meaning they don't roast your beans until your order has been placed. Roasted and packed the same day helps seal in the maximum flavor and freshness. So check them out right now and try the delicious T-Box Coffee at tboxcoffee.com and use the code GOLFSMARTER20. That's GOLFSMARTER20 at checkout because you'll receive 20% off your first order. Then, when you're completely satisfied, T-Box Coffee offers a convenient subscription that can be changed or canceled at any time. Their subscription also allows you to choose your coffee and the frequency in which you want it delivered. And when you're ready to subscribe, you also get 15% off because you're a Golf Smarter listener. Now, golfers finally get a coffee all their own. T-Box Coffee, a premium coffee for golfers. Go to tboxcoffee.com. That's T-E-E-B-O-X. tboxcoffee.com and use code GOLFSMARTER20 to receive 20% off your entire first order. Let's bring breathing into it. I've been hearing a lot about players talking about how important breath is. We had some PGA Tour players on a show recently. And Zach Johnson was talking about, breathing is critically important. You really have to know how to breathe. And it's not just, in and out.
This goes back 20 years. Zen Golf, this coming month is its 20th anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's amazing. You created an industry.
We've had 25 printings, and if you count hardcover, there was never a paperback. It's always been hardcover. Digital and audio, And foreign editions, there's over a million.
That is remarkable.
It's really exciting. And I introduced the importance of breathing in Zen golf and have talked about it the whole time. It's really important because our mind and our breath are very much connected. And this is a traditional Eastern wisdom. If you talk about yoga or you talk about Zen or you talk about Tai Chi or any of those practices, breathing and mind go together. If your mind is uptight, your breath is uptight. And you're breathing up here.
You're saying in your upper chest.
It barely gets all the way into your lungs. And your shoulders are raised and you don't take a deep breath hardly at all. Have you ever heard anybody say, "I was pretty down tight yesterday"? No, we don't have the expression down tight because we're always uptight. When we're under stress, our energy moves up in our body and faster. So we take very short breaths. We're all in our head thinking about stuff. You use your breathing to slow you down and move your energy down. When you breathe all the way out, you really sink down. So I want people, before they ever walk into a dress, after they've done their practice swing, to stand behind the ball, look out towards the target, and then take a full breath in, let it all the way out, and think, breathe it down, feel the ground. Breathe it down, sink in, and really feel your feet on the ground. And then you're as far from your head as you can be, and you're in your body instead of in your head. And then you walk in slow motion. I also take a breath before I take the club back. I take a full breath in, and then as I breathe out, the out breath pushes the club away from the ball into the backswing.
Oh, wow.
And it comes moves very slowly and smoothly. Breathe out, push back. So that's a technique that people can try. But our breathing, another aspect of it is your mind is monitoring your breathing as well. So if you're uptight and your mind is fearful, your breath tightens. You know, we call it deer in the headlights. You actually hold your breath if you're really scared. And then you say, "Oh, the danger has passed." What do?
Right.
And you relax. Your mind also monitors your body. So if you're not breathing, your mind says, "We must still be uptight and in danger." But if your mind says, "Oh, we took a very relaxed breath. Hey, you know what? This shot may not be that dangerous." That's a subconscious functioning of the mind connecting with the breathing. Use your breathing to get you more grounded. I do that when I teach a mindfulness class and we start with grounding. If people go to drjoeparent.com and look under the free resources for practicing mindful awareness, they can come to my free mindfulness sessions that I do a couple times a month. I also have a YouTube channel named Dr. Joe Parent, and I have a lot of my mindfulness sessions recorded on there. So you're welcome to go and practice with them. But I want to share something with your listeners and your viewers. And it's something that I encountered not long ago, and it's using your hand in mindfulness. So because people may be getting this on the podcast, I'm going to describe it. Let's start with our left hand and hold it up about chest high with your palm facing you. Put your index finger of your right hand pointing away from you and put it on the outside of your left wrist. And as you inhale, run your finger up along the outside of your little finger, pause at the top, slowly exhale and run your index finger down the inside of your little finger of your left hand. You're using your right index finger to trace your left hand. Breathe in, going along the outside of your ring finger, pause at the top, slowly breathe out down the inside of your ring finger. pause. Inhale along the inside of your middle finger, pause, exhale down the other side of your middle finger. Inhale along one side of your index finger, exhale all the way down to the base of your thumb. Inhale along the pad of your thumb, exhale along the outside of your thumb to your wrist. That's one set of five. Then you go the opposite direction for another five breaths, then switch hands for another five, and then 10 breaths. So in all, you have four sets of five, or 20 breaths. I taught a student that I'm doing a business talk for. I taught him this to whenever he was getting impatient or he was waiting for an appointment, to chill in this way. And he said he did it in the middle of the day and realized he hadn't taken a full breath the whole day until then.
Wow.
When you do this exercise, you end up taking a full breath in all the way up and a full exhalation all the way down. Up and down. And inhalation goes with energizing. Exhalation goes with settling or relaxing. So you want the exhalation to be a little slower and a little more complete.
A little longer. You know, I can definitely see doing that when I'm struggling to fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'll be able to get to four sets. I hope that I don't get to four sets.
And you don't have to use your hand when you're falling asleep. You can imagine that you're tracing your hand when you're falling asleep. But
right.
Sure.
But do you do that on the golf course, though?
Get yourself grounded. Well, sure, especially if you're waiting for the group. You're in the fairway. You're waiting for the group. Don't get antsy. Take a minute. Do a little bit of that.
Good call.
And then swing a club and get loose and get ready for your shot. But, you know, if your computer is loading a program, don't just
breathe,
sit there.
Breathe, baby, breathe.
Sit there at it, you know. Do your little hand meditation. Ah. It's really, really helpful. I do that sometimes if I'm at a red light.
Hmm.
Because your eyes are open.
Right.
And you can see when the light changes, so hopefully. You don't have to wait for somebody behind you to honk.
I think about breath in golf. Two times that I can see where it would get short. First of all, when things aren't going well, you're
right.
Struggling, you're having mm-hmm. a difficult time, everything speeds, you speed things up unconsciously, but you speed things up.
Absolutely.
And no so question. This would be a good time to implement that. And then also, like on difficult shots, punch shots, keeping the ball down, you know, so that you're, because you're under trees and you've got to get it below. There's a tendency to move quickly through that.
That's and right. Slow yourself down.
Slow yourself down.
Slow yourself down. And in fact, it's been said a number of times, Tom Watson said that, you see, even when you're playing well, you unconsciously speed up a little bit all the way through the round.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if your routine is a quarter of a second faster on each hole, okay, by the time you're on the eighth hole, it's 2 seconds shorter than your regular routine. So we speed up and don't realize it, and by the back nine, we're really moving fast. Tom Watson said he was known for choking on the back nine on Sunday at the U.S. Open and other major tournaments. And he said when he started to breathe and walk more slowly on the back nine, whether he was playing well or not, he was able to keep his game together. And that's when he started winning majors. Phil said the same thing when he won the PGA Championship. That's what he did. And he'd never moved that slowly. It did not look like him. But that's what he implemented.
I can definitely see how I would want to implement that because interestingly, my round yesterday, we're recording this on a Monday. I played on Sunday. Actually, I played Saturday. And I was my intention was strong for the front nine. I parred the first six holes, went bogey, bogey, birdie. So I shot one over on the front. And I was feeling very good about my mechanics. I was feeling good about my attitude. And was excited about carrying this through to the back nine, which I didn't. And I afterwards, I mean, I shot 37-45. And I was like trying to figure out where, I mean, I was still hitting the ball okay. I was hitting the ball well. And I wasn't, you know, I mean, I ended up with 29 putts on the day. So I had a good day there and my chipping was well. But I think that's the problem. I was going faster.
You got a little quick, and you got a little quick at the top.
Yep.
You got a little quick taking the club away. You got a little quick going through your planning and maybe didn't take everything into account. And that's why I talk about everybody in their round has an amen corner. We just finished the Masters not long ago. What holes are amen corner?
11, 12, 13.
That's right, 11, 12, and 13. Well, somewhere between 10 and 15 on the back nine is when everybody struggles. You watch a golf tournament, you'll see the almost always the leaders kind of lose ground then, struggle a little bit then, and then get their game back together for the last few holes. It's a perfect storm for interference with your game. Okay, so you've sped up a little bit. And you've managed to handle that through your athleticism for the first nine holes. But after 10 or 11, it starts to catch up with you. And, you know, this speeding up happens so slowly. It's like going 66 miles an hour, 65 to 66, then 66 to 67, 67 to 68. If over 10 minutes or over 20 minutes, you go a mile an hour faster, you don't feel the difference. Suddenly you're going 80 and you go, whoa, what's going on? That's what happens over the course of a round. You get a little bit quicker, a little bit quicker, a little bit quicker. You accommodate that athletically until a certain point where you can't and you feel like it happened suddenly. It didn't happen suddenly. It was gradual. That happens right there at the beginning of the back nine. Also, if you make a mistake early in the front nine, a lot of holes to play. You make a mistake around 10 or 12 or 13 on the back nine, not many holes to make up for it. You can see the finish line also. Ooh, if only I can bring it home. But that's a lot of holes, six or seven holes. And it's not time for the adrenaline to kick in on the last couple of holes. So you may have stopped for lunch after nine and you're digesting and your brain's not getting enough blood. You may have forgotten to eat or forgotten to drink and you're dehydrated. All these things happen at your amen corner, the first few holes of the back nine, anywhere from 10 to 15. You get past 15, either your round's in the toilet and you don't play very well all the way in, or you bring it back with that adrenaline for 16, 17, and 18. But that's what to watch out for, and that's when to slow yourself down, think things through a little more carefully, do your routine a little more smoothly, and get out of your head thinking about score. You were one over on the front nine. Did you stop and turn that score in?
No, of course not.
Well, then what are you doing thinking about your total score?
Because I have to turn the card over.
You know you're playing well. And I want to bring in a game plan that I want to share that I've taught pros. I had a pro who said this game plan made the difference between him being on the Korn Ferry Tour and the PGA Tour.
And all right, I'm going to hear about that. But we're going to, before we, let's take a quick time out.
As soon as we get back from this break.
This week on Golf Smarter Mulligans, we meet Rosanna Leighton, who shares how we can put ourselves in the zone using self-hypnosis.
What I aimed to do when I developed the Golfer Within program was to create a toolkit of mental skills. If you think about it, you go back out on the course, you've got all of your clubs there, and you can hit several different shots with each of those clubs. You should have just as many mental skills. There are lots of different ways that you can use to take something out of your mind or put something into your mind, different ways of visualizing things, different ways of feeling about things. Using hypnosis and NLP, you can create this whole toolkit of mental skills, and then you've always got something to fall back on.
That's Golf Smarter Mulligans, the best of the Golf Smarter archives. Now with a new logo. Game improvement and interesting golf conversations never get old, which is why this and many of the Golf Smarter Mulligans episodes are still relevant and helpful 10 years later. That's Golf Smarter each Tuesday and Golf Smarter Mulligans released every Friday. Please subscribe and review us from wherever you listen to your podcasts. Okay, Doc, we're back.
All right. Continue. When we left, I was about to tell you the secret game plan. It's very, very simple. Give yourself the best chance for birdie. And for higher handicaps, net birdie. Without taking an unnecessary risk. This is a hole-by-hole game plan. It doesn't matter what you shot on the last hole. Doesn't matter how hard the next hole is going to be. It doesn't matter what your score is. If you were four over after four holes, what do you want to do on the next hole? Give yourself the best chance for birdie without taking a necessary risk. If you were two under after four holes, what do you want to do on the next hole? Give yourself the best chance for birdie without taking an unnecessary risk. Now, where it really comes in is you're on the 16th hole and you're one under par. What do you want to do on the 17th? Most people would say, oh, I just want to par in and protect my score. Not a good plan. Stick to the game plan. Give myself the best chance for birdie, net birdie, without taking an unnecessary risk. And you do that all the way in. It separates you from your overall score. You don't have to think about your overall score because this is a hole-by-hole game plan, and that's all you're doing. Now, if you hit it in trouble or you miss the green, it becomes give myself the best chance to save par or net par without taking an unnecessary risk. And that's the whole thing. Secret.
That's the name of the show.
Simple game plan. Golf Smarter.
A whole mile.
There you go.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. That's the episode. Definitely the title of the episode. You know, we talk a lot about for new golfers, for intermediate golfers, the importance of getting fitted for golf clubs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some people say, well, you know, once I get my swing consistent, then I'll get fitted. I'm not going to get fitted yet. I want to get a better swing first. And it's like, you know, your swing really doesn't change that much over time, unless you're working incredibly hard at it. But, you know, getting fitted by a good fitter, you know, it'll take get fitted and you're going to play better anyway once your sticks are right for you.
Well, there are two approaches to that. One is get fitted for the way you're playing now.
Right.
And then you will definitely play better. If you have clubs that aren't properly suited to you, if when you set up, the toe is up in the air or the, you know, the lie is not appropriate for you, the toe's up in the air or the heel's up in the air and you have to adjust your swing for the clubs, not so good. Because you will adjust your swing for the clubs, and you will actually play worse. So it's good to get fitted for your game as you are. Once you're comfortable with that, you can go to a club fitter and say, this is what I'm working on, and this is where I want to go. Set me up with clubs that I need to make these moves to hit it well. And you may not play that well right away, but your clubs will be set for your mind to subconsciously try to move in the direction that the clubs work better. And they work better in the direction that you want to make your swing go. So if you're swinging and you're coming over the top and the toe is catching first, and you get fitted for that, you're going to hit it better even if you're coming over the top. But if you want to come more from the inside, then you want to have it set so that you need to come from the inside to hit it cleanly. More painful, but it will move you in the direction you want to go if you're willing to put in the effort.
Well, I appreciate those insights. That was not what I was expecting, because we don't talk about club fitting when we get together. But I wanted to introduce the idea.
It's how the club fitting works with your mind. That's what I know.
Right. Well, that's what I want to introduce, is getting fitted for your mental game when you're new or intermediate game. Because, you know, we beat ourselves up in so many different ways in golf. And, you know, the anger, the frustration, the distraction. We know that we're not going to get, every shot's not going to be perfect. We know that walking into it, and yet we get upset with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we lose concentration, and we play faster, and we breathe faster. How do you get fitted for your mental game?
Well, you need
Did
to...
I stump you?
You, first, you need to be mindful of what it is that you are doing. I have a chapter in Zen Golf called Clearing the Interference.
Right.
Okay. And it has two parts, recognition and undoing. First, you have to recognize how you are getting in your own way. Once you recognize how you are getting in your own way, then you can change your habits through your routine and through your course management, through the way that you prepare for the round, through the way that you relate to score for the round, for the way you relate to other people, the way you relate to your own emotions. Now, I go through all of these different things in Zen Golf. I don't have time to do all that today. But there is a habit-changing system that I introduced that I call the ninja system, which is necessary intention and non-judgmental awareness. That you have, you know, there's a psychologist joke, how many psychologists does it take to change a light bulb? Only one, but the light bulb has to want to change. Well, you know, you have to want to work on your mental game to make a difference. If you do, then the necessary intention is there. Then you have to pay non-judgmental awareness. Pay attention, but not beat yourself up when you see what habits come up. But to do that, you have to start with clearing the interference by breathing and being mindful and being aware of what you did. Now, I also teach a post-shot routine. In the post-shot routine, you replace the swing you made with the one you wish you'd made. And notice what the difference was, so that you become aware of what you did so that you can undo that in the future. And I want to share three ways that we interfere with our swing, okay? Number one is not trusting and trying to guide it to where we want it to go. And then we make a very tentative kind of half-hearted swing, because the more we hold back, the less chance of it going sideways. Wrong, but that's what we think. It's a mistaken thinking. So I'll just make this hold the face square towards the target and push it out there kind of swing. That doesn't go well. The second type is a more full swing, but you don't trust that it's going to do what you want it to do. You want it to draw, but you don't really trust that it's going to. You've aimed out to the right for a right-hander, And as you swing, you say, I need to help it. And you roll your hands over. Or you swing out a little extra. And you either hit a big block out to the right or a little snap hook to the left. So helping is not such a good idea. Conversely, if you want it to fade, you either cut across it extra and double cross, or you hold that face open and it, pew, get a big slice. So helping is not a good idea. The third one is preventing. That as you're playing your shot, you say, uh-oh, I hope it doesn't draw too much. And then you hold it off and don't let yourself release the club. That's when you get that nice big push block or push slice. So guiding, helping, preventing. Those are the three ways you interfere with making a trusting, committed swing. Find out what you do and give yourself a little pep talk and say, look, any of those three, I'm going to hit a worse shot than if I just trust it and go after it. So to fit yourself for your mental game, measure the level of your commitment on each shot. You can use a 1 to 5 scale. 5, total commitment, no holding back, no guiding, no helping, no preventing, total trust. A 1, no trust whatsoever. And as you move in the direction of more committed swings, you'll see your game get better. But to start with, you can see where your fitting is. Oh, I'm averaging 3. That's not so good. Try to move it up. Try to move it up. And the more committed swings you make, the better you're going to play and the more fun you're going to have.
I can't tell you how often Dr. Joe Parent quotes come up during a round of golf for us. Well, I made the putt, I just didn't hole it. That's a classic Dr. Parent. Pull out the Etch-a-Sketch. Oh, one of my
erase
most
it.
Favorite.
Erase and
erase it. Just take it out, shake it up, and let it go. And now measure your intention. Oh, man. Dr. Joe, I'm so glad that you continue to agree to have conversation with me, because I learn something or I'm reminded of something important every single time we talk.
Well, and let's do it again before too long.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I'm really sorry that we didn't get to play together when I was down in Ojai.
That was
and I loved Soul Park. Mm. And I told this story on the show a couple weeks back, but there was a group in front of us, and one of the gentlemen in the foursome in front of us had turned 101 the week before.
Wow.
And he plays 3 times a week.
Pretty good.
And two of the guys that were in my foursome were part of that group. There was a large group, and they play 3 times a week. And they said, I said, well, God, has he ever shot his age? And they're like, he's been doing it for decades. He says he can't hit it far, but he hits it straight every single time.
I was just about to say that. He doesn't lose a lot of golf balls.
He does not lose a lot of golf balls. He can't hit them far enough to do it.
That's great.
Joe, thanks so much. It was great to talk to you again, and I really appreciate your time.
And please come for the free mindfulness sessions that we do a couple of times a month. You can find the information there on drjoeparent.com.
Please make sure to check out our YouTube channel, because I'm planning on putting more episodes up there so that you can see the conversations that I have this time with Dr. Joe. And a lot of people listen to podcasts on YouTube. It's amazing to me, but sometimes you just want to look at who's doing the talking. So go to youtube.com and search for Golf Smarter TV. Now, today's episode was introduced by another Golf Smarter listener who not only gets to brag to his playing partners that he's on a podcast, but he's also been dubbed as a Golf Smarter ambassador. So thank you, Dan Weatherly, who plays at St. Andrew's City Park in Orland Park, Kansas. He's also getting the opportunity to choose the gift he'd like to receive for opening today's episode. So why don't you become one of our ambassadors too, so that you can be on the show and receive a great gift? We actually have a variety of prizes to choose from. I'll give you a choice. So write to me today, and I'll give you some fabulous options, including the Eagle Eye Rangefinder, which is exactly what Dan is planning to get. Just write to golfsmarterpodcast@gmail.com or click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com and let me know that you'd like to introduce an upcoming episode, and I'll send you some simple instructions. Looking forward to playing golf tomorrow, as I haven't played in a week and a half. Now, I know I'm whining because I'm incredibly lucky to play every week, preferably twice a week. But hey, I love to be on the golf course, especially after an interview like this one that inspires me and provides me with a couple more tips to just make it more enjoyable. I haven't played in like 10 days, mostly because my grandchildren were visiting and there's no place I'd rather be. But my second favorite place is to be on the golf course. Except if the Warriors continue to be in the NBA playoffs, then I'd rather be watching them, and then next would be on the golf course. Or maybe doing a podcast or video production. Then get me out to the, you know what I'm trying to tell you here. Listen, if you have any questions, comments, suggestions for upcoming episodes, or for me to shut up, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.